It is 8 minutes now past 8 o'clock on a Sunday night. We are remembering, and we have been since yesterday, the life of legendary Vikings head coach Bud Grant. He passed away yesterday at the age of 95. Among those tuning in to share their memories here on WCCO Radio, former running back for the Vikings, Chuck Foreman.
We lost somebody special. You know, he was 95 years old, but he was an energetic, sharp 95, and so certainly this was a shock to all of us.
WCCO's Dave Lee as well called in to share his memories.
I know he had a good run, but he was so practical and had so many things to talk about just with life. And he was, you know, I lost my dad, and then he was just kind of a mentor. He was a guy that I could say pretty much anything to, and then I would listen to what he had to say. And even when I didn't tell him something, he knew what was going on.
Bob Lertzema. Benchwarmer Bob also calling in to talk about Bud Grant's failure to win a Super Bowl.
After he gave us a talk after we lost or something, how he reinforced our confidence, got everything out on the table and said, hey, this is what we need. And, you know, you guys did the best. We got to coach more. It's much our fault as yours. So he took a lot of the blame away from the players and put it on his shoulders.
Again, that's Bob Lertzema and others sharing their thoughts on the passing of Bud Grant, the legend. Of course, he was good friends with Sid Hartman, as you know. And here is WCCO's Chad Hartman on Sid giving Bud his Hall of Fame speech.
One of the greatest thrills of my father's life was when Bud gets inducted into the Hall of Fame. And at the time, the first media member to ever give the speech was my father. And I remember we practiced that over and over and over again. And it was just such a great thrill for him.
Again, Bud Grant passing away, age of 95. And on our John Schuster Caldwell Banker hotline is Joel Maturi, former athletic director at the University of Minnesota. And friend, Joel, thanks for coming on tonight. I know it's a little later down there in Florida.
Well, Susie, it's always good to speak to you and certainly to talk about a legend and a Gopher legend as well. And Coach Grant.
Your memories, what was your relationship and what are your memories of him as a coach and as a human?
Well, first of all, you know, being a Minnesotan and growing up on the Iron Range and following the Vikings as I did, how could you not follow Bud Grant and the success that he had, you know, the four Super Bowls? And as Bob Lertzema said, we didn't win any, but there are a lot of teams who won't get there at all. And Coach Grant, and I think the manner that he did it. I went on to be a high school coach and certainly tried to learn things from many. And though I did not know Coach Grant at that time during my coaching career, I certainly learned a lot from him and in many ways would call him a mentor in that regard.
He really personified kind of grit and toughness. I remember, Joel, my memory, my story is the city was naming Bud Grant Way. It was down right there by the stadium, and it was, I swear to you, it was 30 below zero. I mean, it was cold. It was so cold. And he's up there with like a jacket and no hat, and I'm just like, oh my goodness, what are you doing? And I said, you know, it's freezing and you just have a jacket and a hat on. Like, oh my gosh. And he just said something about cold is a state of mind. And his guys didn't get all that foo-foo stuff on the sidelines. They were tough and mean and they didn't let cold get in the way of them playing tough football, which I always thought was kind of interesting.
Well, those old Viking days at Metropolitan Stadium, that's the way it was. Both teams were on the same side of the field. Longtime Viking fans remember that. And you'd have the Vikings sitting there, and maybe they've had their hoods and so forth on, but they didn't have all the heating machines that the other team would have. And Coach would just be out there in his regular prep coaching and garb. And I think he convinced the players it was that. And it was a state of mind with him. That's just the kind of person that he was.
He expected that from his players, too, right, to be tough.
Well, and they were tough, let's be honest. I mean, the Purple People Eaters and the way that they played football at that time. And I just think, you know, and I know all the good things being said about him because they were so true. Sometimes when people pass, they become bigger than they were. That's not the case with Coach Grant. He was every bit the icon, the legacy that he left in the coaching profession, but probably in the development of people was second to none. I became real close to Bob McNamara, and Bob, of course, passed, and both Coach Grant and myself spoke at Bob's funeral, and I was able to visit Coach Grant with Bob on more than one occasion, and listen to the stories that they told, and the togetherness that they had, and obviously I think Sid was probably Coach's best friend, but maybe number two was Bob McNamara.
Yeah, it was quite the crew, and I think about Bud Grant, and are there coaches now that have those same traits, or is that sort of the end of an era in terms of coaching?
Well, I think certain things never end, and I think in some ways Coach was ahead of things. I mean, he treated people, you know, as again I heard some of your previous information here prior to my getting on, you know, with Bob Lertzenbaum and all. He treated people extremely well, and he expected them to play to the best of their ability, and he didn't yell and scream a lot. And I think in today's world, that's how coaching has become. It's a matter of sharing what the job was. It's a matter of everybody doing their part, of doing their best, and being able to walk away. And I think Coach, you know, all these different aspects of him being the hunter that he was, even during the season, getting away and doing those things. You know, for a while, coaches didn't do any of that, and that's obviously was part of his personality.
Yeah, and he was a friend to many. You know, I know you said Sid, but you just read these stories that have come through even on our text line, so many people sharing about how kind he was to just the regular person.
Well, I think that's, again, which was part of his legacy, part of the individual that he was to all. And I know I was a beneficiary of his kindness on more than one occasion. I remember one story, Susie, when we opened up at that time TCF Bank Stadium, now Huntington Bank Stadium, and we honored Coach Grant at halftime, I don't know, maybe the second or third game that we held in the stadium. And so I had Coach in the suite, brought him down, honored him at halftime, and he was so thrilled to be recognized. Obviously, the fans were very receptive of his recognition. And I had to bring him back up to the suite after halftime because nobody knew where they're going. The building is new to us, and we have to, you know, make sure that it's done. And I had to hustle back because we were honoring one of our teams at the first time out of the third quarter. And I had just had some Achilles surgery prior to this, and I'm jogging in the concourse, which I'm not supposed to. I'm not supposed to do anything but walk.
Right, right.
And I re-injured my Achilles. It rolled right up on me. I'll never forget that as long as I live. So when I got back to the suite eventually on crutches, Coach wondered what happened. And he's, every time we saw each other after that, he would give me a rough time.
I imagine.
That's what it was.
Well, thanks for coming on. And as I say, I'm looking forward to seeing you next Friday and getting some Florida sun on me. We could all use it around here. I wish I could take everybody to Florida for a week.
Well, you're having too much snow. It's convinced me that we've made the decision to be a little bit of a snowbirds down here and have a good time, and we'll look forward to visiting you once you get here.
Wonderful. Thanks, Joel. Appreciate your time. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Susie.
That is Joel Maturi, the former athletic director at the University of Minnesota. It is 16 minutes now past 8 o'clock. It is 8:20 now on a Sunday night, 30 degrees, light snow falling. My name is Susie Jones, sitting in tonight for Geraldine Steele. Geraldine will be back. She is taking some time off to heal. She will be returning. But in the meantime, here we sit tonight, and Jonathan Lowe is at the helm, and we've got a lot left of the program. We are watching the Oscars out of the corner of our eye. We're not going to tell you anything because a lot of people tape the Oscars, right, Jonathan? They don't want to know. They want to sit down at a different time and have a little popcorn and watch it on tape. So we don't want to give anything away.
What we are going to tell you right now is that Morgan Freeman is up on stage right now, and he's bald.
He's bald.
He is bald. This is disconcerting to me.
Oh, no. What happened?
Well, just you think of Morgan Freeman, and you think the luxurious mane of hair,
right,
that he has always had on his head, and the fact that he is bald. I haven't seen him that way before, and so I'm... I'm soaking it in.
Wonderful. Well, we're going to watch the Oscars and just share with you a little bit more about them coming up in the next half hour. I want to just remind you, though, if you don't know, have you seen any of them? I'm going to list them, Jonathan. And then you say yes or no, have you seen them?
Okay.
Okay. So this is the best picture. We're not doing supporting. We're just doing best picture. All Quiet on the Western Front.
No.
Okay, you haven't? I have. Avatar, the Way of Water.
No.
I have not either. Banshees of Inisherin.
Inisherin, yes.
Saw it. I saw it too. Elvis.
Yes.
Oh, I did too. Everything, Everywhere, All at Once.
Yes.
Oh, you did?
I did see that, yes.
The Fablemans?
Yes.
Wow, you've seen a lot. Tar?
Yes.
You saw that?
Yes.
Maverick, Top Gun Maverick?
No.
I saw that. Triangle of Sadness?
No.
Okay. Women Talking?
Yes.
You did? You saw a lot of them.
Now, again, you have to remember that a lot of these Academy Award nominees are going to be SAG nominees. And since we are part of SAG, this is probably the most important thing for – not I shouldn't say important, but the thing I take most seriously about my part in being in the union is they're going to give me a chance to watch these – critically acclaimed films and vote on them. I'm going to take due diligence and watch these films. I don't do it with the television because with the TV, I've never known whether they were going after a specific episode of television or whether they were going for a whole series.
Mm.
And trying to watch a whole series, even if you're watching some of these series that are 10 episodes, 8 episodes, 10 episodes, that's 8 hours, 10 hours. That you have to binge that,
mm-hmm.
and really take your time and sit down and watch a lot of these in a row. Now they come in easier chunks to settle than a movie,
mm-hmm.
but overall, like I said, that's not even counting some of these shows that are 23, 24 episode arcs that are on major television.
So we're talking about the Oscars. There are a lot of Oscar parties going on, including one where Chan Poling, who is the husband of Eleanor Mondale, who I got to know, also creator of Glen Sheen, the musical, also a member of The Suburbs. So we're going to call him back right now because he is waiting for our call. He said, just press call. And in the meantime, our number here is 651-461-9226. 651-461-9226. If you have seen any of the Oscar movies and you want to share which ones you liked, which ones you didn't like, I did watch All Quiet on the Western Front. It was in subtitles. And it was long, but it was very good. I can't say anything about Avatar. The Banshees, and I'm not going to say that last name right, I thought was interesting. It was a little slow. And also, I saw Elvis. That was cool. Not that one that's probably going to win Best Pictures, Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. And I saw Top Gun. So that's about it. Do we have Chan on the line?
No, not yet. We will try to get him in a little bit. The only two that were on the SAG list that I did not see.
Oh, yes, our list, yeah.
Were Top Gun Maverick and Avatar Way of Water. And the reason why those – I've never gone forth and seen the one for stunts.
Mm-hmm.
And those two were nominated for stunts. They weren't nominated for acting.
Oh, okay.
But the rest of those – and that's the thing with it, with the list now at 10 movies for – up to 10 for an Oscar nomination for Best Picture,
mm-hmm.
is that you're going to blow out the SAG Awards, you're going to blow out the Golden Globes, you're going to blow out the BAFTAs because they don't have that many nominees.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times you'll see because it's different entities putting up the nominations, you'll have different awards, different people that are up for certain awards. There are people that are up for Best Actress and Best Actor that were not mm-hmm. SAG nominated, that were not Golden Globe nominated, and vice versa.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so if I wanted to see everything as far as the movies, all of them together or all of them to compare, then you're probably getting into the 20s or 30s when you're talking about the number of movies you have to see, and that's a lot.
Yeah. It is 8:26 on a Sunday night, and we're talking about the Oscars as we move toward the 9 o'clock hour. Of course, we always have our center stage where we talk about a number of different productions that are going on, and there are some fun ones that we're going to get to coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. But as I said, right now, a number of parties, a lot of people like to dress up and actually pretend like they're at the Oscars. And as I mentioned, Chan Poling is at one of those parties, and he is on our John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Hi, Chan.
Hi, Susie. How are you?
I'm good. Are you having fun tonight?
I am. I don't know if you knew, my son is a PR agent. He's got a big PR agency in Hollywood, and he's got two clients up for Oscars tonight.
Wonderful.
So it's a big, yeah, we're excited here.
Have they won, or do you know if they're going to win?
He reps composers and songwriters. So
it's the
David Byrne song, the Sunblock song from Everything Everywhere All at Once, and the score for Tar. I think Tar is up to, I'm not sure, but anyway,
yeah. We're having fun.
We're excited.
Good, good.
Yeah.
Well, I saw this story come across my email, and I love a lot. I love Glenn Sheen. I love the Congdon Manor. I just do. And I know there's the play that you wrote, co-wrote, and composed music for, and they're going to have it this summer. And I thought, I'm going to call and see if he wants to pop on and talk about that. And then you popped on with me and said you've got a lot of stuff going on. Maybe you want to jump on and tell us what's happening in your world and where you're performing, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, well, thank you. You haven't seen Glenn Sheen yet?
I have not, and so that's why I'm going to go on July 8th, 2023. I will be going to the History Theater to watch it.
Oh, good, good. You can always be my guest, but yeah, definitely check it out. It's our seventh year, I think.
Wow.
If not our eighth year, I can't remember how many years we took off for COVID, but we started in 2015, wrote a musical based on the murders and the trials. It sounds very odd, but it's been a big hit. So obviously, I think we did a good job with it. it's kind of a comedy, but we're very sensitive to the fact the victims were real people, and we walked the line pretty tastefully, I think. But it's really a fun night because this whole story is just nutty. You know, the characters, Marjorie and her husband are such great bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
In the big mansion on the rip on the lake with the storm and the stormy night and the dog barking in the middle of the night. It's just it's a great show. You know, it won the Ivy for best musicals. When it first came out.
And it is funny because, I mean, you know, for people that don't know the story, you know, you mentioned it, but on June 27, 1977, the heiress, Elizabeth Condon, was found dead in her bedroom in the Glen Sheen mansion, smothered with a silk pillow. Outside her room, the night nurse, Velma. I mean, it's not funny, but it, like you said, the characters are rich. And so how fun to have it be back and so popular. So that, again, I just want to repeat, that's at the State this summer. I'm looking at that date. But you've got other things happening sooner than that. Let's talk about that.
Well, I love writing. You know, I don't know if your listeners know, but I founded the rock band The Suburbs back in the 80s, and we were we're part of the new wave scene from Minneapolis, and we're still going strong. So we're playing First Avenue. We've got it's selling very well. So if anyone wants to go see the Burbs at First Avenue, that's April 21st, and then besides my rock bands and being in the New Standards, I love writing musicals, and I've been lucky enough to have a great writing partner, Jeffrey Hatcher, who just a very prolific, successful playwright. He's a screenwriter, too. He and I, he wrote Glensheen together, and the History Theater has asked us to do, they commissioned us to do a musical for this year, called based on Jesse James, because Jesse James came to Northfield and robbed the Northfield Bank, and that was kind of his downfall. So we have a new show coming up. It's opening
April 29th.
Thank you. I have it right in front of me.
Okay.
that's opening April 29th, and that's going to be kind of a real rock and roll, kind of a new telling of Jesse James' life, but music by me and the book by Jeff Hatcher. So that's April 29th. Burbs, April 21st. And then, Glensheen this summer.
You are busy, man.
Yeah, definitely. And
good to know.
And of course, the New Standards, too, are out and about, too.
I love the New Standards. And I understand you were just back from Palm Springs, where you partied with Lowell Pickett from the Dakota.
Yeah, Lowell.
He's a good guy.
Lowell really got us good. Yeah, Lowell really got the New Standards going at the Dakota years ago, and we became good pals. So, and Lowell's recently taken it off, so I had to show him a few things.
Yeah, well, good. Hey, we've got all this stuff written down. Thank you. Have fun tonight. Good luck to your son's clients. And I still can't believe that it's so popular, the murder of the Glensheen murders, but who knows what lights people's fires.
Oh, yeah, you got to see it. You'll see. And I want to hear your review. But thanks for keeping me in mind.
Yeah, good to talk to you.
And thanks. Yeah, thanks for calling.
Okay. All right. Bye-bye. That is,
bye.
Chan Poland with us of The Suburbs, The New Standards, also the writer of the musical Glensheen, and now The Defeat of Jesse James. And that one comes April 29th. It is 8:34. We're going to do the weather for you right after this. It is 8:38 on a Sunday night. My name is Susie Jones. As I mentioned, I'm filling in tonight for Geraldine. Geraldine is healing and will return. Talking about winter and the winter blues, and we've got a lot coming at us all at once, right? We've got inflation with groceries up, and we also have an increase in energy prices. In fact, the Community Action Partnership of Hennepin County is actually seeing a huge increase in the need for financial assistance following a two-year trend of high energy prices. At the agency, energy assistance applications are pouring in. So we have Tammy Stauffer. She's on our newsline, our John Schuster Coldwell Banker hotline. She is Community Action Partnership of Hennepin County Director of Energy Assistance. That's a mouthful, Tammy. Thanks for coming on.
You know, thank you so much for having me. And yeah, it is a mouthful. I agree.
What are you seeing out there? I'm reading you have 20,000 applications for help right now?
Yes, we do. We have over 20,000 applications right now. We had a huge influx of applications this last week.
And what's happening? I mean, how does this happen? Do you get behind on your bill? Do they get behind and then ask for help? Or are they proactive and say, I can't do this? How do people come to you?
It's kind of a little bit of both. We have households that are very proactive, that apply every year. They get their application. They know when the program starts, when it ends, and they come in every year. And then we have brand new ones that they get behind and they don't know what to do. And our program is a benefit for them and a resource. And we're very happy that we're able to do so.
And you say families in so many instances are deciding, are we going to pay our energy bill or are we going to get groceries? And that's a horrible position, I would imagine, for people to be in.
Well, it's not only that, but it's also, are we going to pay the rent? Are we going to pay the mortgage? And with the inflation going on right now and the energy costs that have increased over the last 2 years, our program is a benefit to households that we can help supplement those costs that and offset them so that they can afford to put food on their feed their families.
Sure.
They can afford to keep their roof over their house, you know, with their house over their head.
Yeah. Tell me how it works. What do they get? How does it all make sense and help the people in the end?
Yep. So to begin with, I said you fill out an energy assistance application. We have them on our website. The Department of Commerce has them on their website as well. We have them via paper, so they can fill out a paper app and send one in. And most recently, which has caused the huge influx of applications, is the Department of Commerce has now created an online application where a person can just go to their phone to the website link and be able to fill out and apply right online, upload their income information, gets automatically sent to the agency. It's the same application across the entire state. We don't have separate ones. And we can work through those applications in the order that they were received, and we expedite people who are in crisis. So if they have a disconnection or they've been shut off, they have no heat due to a furnace that has gone out, they get expedited so we can help restore that heat.
We're talking to Tammy Stauffer, a Community Action Partnership of Hennepin County Director of Energy Assistance, about the increase in applications and the need with the price of energy up and up and up, and inflation. We're seeing a lot of burden, a lot of pressure on families. Tammy, I just wanted to ask you, are some members of our community affected more than others?
Absolutely. Households that our program deals with households that are low income, mm-hmm. and so they are just, you know, disproportionately affected more than a household that has a dual income. We have a lot of single families, single parent households that are affected. We have a lot of culturally diverse households mm-hmm. that are affected.
Yeah, I think I read, Tammy, that Black households are 3 times more likely to be affected compared to white household. For Hispanic families, it's about twice as much. So you talk about poverty.
Absolutely.
And people of color, those people are the most affected by these increase in prices, whether it's food or rent, what have you. Now, am I correct to say that I have a story that was written about this. I understand this. She said, I lived it. Do you have a personal knowledge of going through something like this?
Absolutely. I said, when I had my son almost 28 years ago this month. I was unemployed, and I said I was on welfare, and I struggled to find work and childcare and trying to pay the bills and keep him fed and housed. Mm-hmm. I said, I didn't know about this program. I said, I would have loved to known about this program at that time. So I've been in the shoes, you know, that of our households,
mm-hmm.
you know, how they are. So
right.
I've
you really get
shoes.
It. Right, right, right.
I get it.
So this is actually money. You give them money to help pay for their energy bills or for whatever they need.
We give actually the vendors the money. So they apply, and then we send the money directly to the electric, the gas companies, the fuel companies, to be able to help offset their bills. So it goes as a credit on their account.
Okay. And is this rural and urban? I mean, this isn't just the Twin Cities, right?
Nope, this is statewide.
And the need is, do you see the need all over the state of Minnesota, or is it just concentrated in one area?
Oh, it's all over the state of Minnesota. I said we have a heavy concentration in the metro area because we have a more dense population here, but it's all over. And our rural areas have difficulty with most of their utilities are fuel utilities, and the cost of propane is higher than usual too. Mm-hmm. And so they, you know, to be able to get a bill to fill a tank to heat their home for the winter, or even just a few months in the winter, is close to $800 to $100 to $1,000. So households don't have that right off just in their bank account.
Yeah, that's a lot. And I see, according to the Consumer Price Index in Minnesota, electricity bills are up 24% and gas 57%. So we really are looking at some big increases that people can't afford. So you mentioned the 20,000 applications. You're asking people to be patient as best they can.
Yep.
And as you say, they prioritize emergencies. So if someone's in a cold house, you'll handle that first.
Absolutely. Yep. We sure will. And we do say patience. I said, we will get to everybody. I promise we will get to everybody. So please have patience with us.
Can you tell people if they're listening and they need to either use this themselves or share it with somebody else, where should they go?
The easiest way to go, because this is across the state, is to the Minnesota Department of Commerce website.
Mm-hmm.
Just Google energy assistance, and on that, you put your county in, and they'll tell you exactly who your provider is and who to contact. And then that online application is right there as well. So you can just do it right there and be able to get your application in immediately.
Great. It is 8:38 on a Sunday night. My name is Susie Jones. As I mentioned, I'm filling in tonight for Geralyn. Geralyn is healing and will return. Talking about winter and the winter blues, and we've got a lot coming at us all at once, right? We've got inflation with groceries up, and we also have an increase in energy prices. In fact, the Community Action Partnership of Hennepin County is actually seeing a huge increase in the need for financial assistance following a 2-year trend of high energy prices. At the agency, energy assistance applications are pouring in. So we have Tammy Stauffer. She's on our newsline, our John Schuster Coldwell Banker hotline. She is Community Action Partnership of Hennepin County Director of Energy Assistance. That's a mouthful, Tammy. Thanks for coming on.
You know, thank you so much for having me. And yeah, it is a mouthful. I agree.
What are you seeing out there? I'm reading you have 20,000 applications for help right now?
Yes, we do. We have over 20,000 applications right now. We had a huge influx of applications this last week.
And what's happening? I mean, how does this happen? Do you get behind on your bill? Do they get behind and then ask for help? Or are they proactive and say, I can't do this? How do people come to you?
It's kind of a little bit of both. We have households that are very proactive, that apply every year. They get their application. They know when the program starts, when it ends, and they come in every year. And then we have brand new ones that they get behind and they don't know what to do. And our program is a benefit for them and a resource. And we're very happy that we're able to do so.
And you say families in so many instances are deciding, are we going to pay our energy bill or are we going to get groceries? And that's a horrible position, I would imagine, for people to be in.
Well, it's not only that, but it's also, are we going to pay the rent? Are we going to pay the mortgage? And with the inflation going on right now and the energy costs that have increased over the last 2 years, our program is a benefit to households that we can help supplement those costs and offset them so that they can afford to put food feed their families.
Sure.
They can afford to keep their roof over their house, you know, with their house over their head.
Yeah. Tell me how it works. What do they get? How does it all make sense and help the people in the end?
Yep. So to begin with, they said you fill out an energy assistance application. We have them on our website. The Department of Commerce has them on their website as well. We have them via paper, so they can fill out a paper app and send one in. And most recently, which has caused the huge influx of applications, is the Department of Commerce has now created an online application where a person can just go to their phone to the website link and be able to fill out and apply right online, upload their income information, gets automatically sent to the agency. It's the same application across the entire state. We don't have separate ones. and we can work through those applications in the order that they were received, and we expedite people who are in crisis. So if they have a disconnection or they've been shut off, they have no heat due to a furnace that has gone out, they get expedited so we can help restore those that heat.
We're talking to Tammy Stauffer, a Community Action Partnership of Hennepin County Director of Energy Assistance, about the increase in applications and the need with the price of energy up and up and up and inflation. We're seeing a lot of burden, a lot of pressure on families. Tammy, I just wanted to ask you, are some members of our community affected more than others?
Absolutely. Households that our program deals with households that are low income, mm-hmm. and so they are disproportionately affected more than a household that has a dual income. We have a lot of single families, single parent households that are affected. We have a lot of culturally diverse households mm-hmm. that are affected.
Yeah, and I think I read, Tammy, that black households are 3 times more likely to be affected compared to white household. For Hispanic families, it's about twice as much. So you talk about poverty
absolutely.
And people of color, those people are the most affected by these increase in prices, whether it's food or rent, what have you. Now, am I correct to say that I have a story that was written about this. I understand this. She said, I lived it. Do you have a personal knowledge of going through something like this?
Absolutely. I said, when I had my son almost 28 years ago this month, I was unemployed, and I said I was on welfare, and I struggled to find work and childcare and trying to pay the bills and keep him fed and housed. Mm-hmm. I said, I didn't know about this program. I said, I would have loved to known about this program at that time. So I've been in the shoes, that of our households, mm-hmm. How they are. So
right.
I've
you really get shoes. It. Right, right, right.
I get it.
So this is actually money. You give them money to help pay for their energy bills or for whatever they need?
We give actually the vendors the money. So they apply, and then we send the money directly to the electric, the gas companies, the fuel companies, to be able to help offset their bills. So it goes as a credit on their account.
Okay. And is this rural and urban? I mean, this isn't just the Twin Cities, right?
Nope, this is statewide.
And the need is, do you see the need all over the state of Minnesota, or is it just concentrated in one area?
Oh, it's all over the state of Minnesota. I said we have a heavy concentration in the metro area because we have a more dense population here, but it's all over. And our rural areas have difficulty with most of their utilities are fuel utilities, and the cost of propane is higher than usual too. Mm-hmm. And so they, to be able to get a bill to fill a tank to heat their home for the winter, or even just a few months in the winter, is close to $800 to $900 to $1,000. So yeah. Households don't have that right off just in
yeah.
their bank account.
Yeah. That's a lot. And I see, according to the Consumer Price Index in Minnesota, electricity bills are up 24% and mm-hmm. Gas 57%. So we
yep.
really are looking at some big increases that people can't afford. So you mentioned the 20,000 applications. You're asking people to be patient as best they can.
Yep.
And as you say, they prioritize emergencies. So if someone's
yep.
in a cold house, you'll handle that first.
Absolutely. Yep. We sure will. And we do say patience. I said, we will get to everybody. I promise we will get to everybody. So please have patience with us.
Can you tell people, if they're listening and they need to either use this themselves or share it with somebody else, where should they go?
The easiest way to go, because this is across the state, is to the Minnesota Department of Commerce website.
Mm-hmm.
just Google energy assistance, and on that, it will, you put your county in, and it'll tell you exactly which, who your provider is and who to contact. And then that online application is right there as well. So you can just do it right there and be able to get your application in immediately.
Great. Is there anything you want to add before I let you go? Hold on. Go ahead. Okay, go ahead.
The program stops taking applications May 31st. So make sure that you get your application in before May 31st right now. And if you've applied already, I said, please, and you haven't heard from the agency, I said, contact us, and we will let you know what's going on with your application. If you're missing some information we need to finish your application, we'll let you know that at that time.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Tammy. Thanks for coming on tonight. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I am so happy to have been here. This is a passion of mine. Mm-hmm. It's what I've been doing for 14 years.
Yeah. So, helping people stay warm.
Yep.
And feed their family. Well, thank you, Tammy. Yep. Tammy Stauffer, a Community Action Partnership of Hennepin County Director of Energy Assistance, with us on News Talk 830 WCCO. The time right now is 8:49. It is 8:52 on WCCO Radio. You're listening to Steele Talking. Geraldine Steele is off tonight. I'm filling in. Jonathan Lowe is at the helm as we near the 9 o'clock hour here on WCCO Radio. Of course, the 9 o'clock hour is all about entertainment. It's called Center Stage, and we've got a big lineup of people for Center Stage. We're also keeping our eye on the Oscars as they are taking place in Los Angeles. But we thought for just a minute, Jonathan, we would talk about the Golden Raspberry winners, or should we say losers. They've been announced. Blonde, starring Oscar nominee Ana de Armas, won Worst Picture of the Year and Worst Screenplay.
Wow.
Hold on. Tom Hanks was voted Worst Supporting Actor and Worst Screen Combo for Tom Hanks and his latex-laden face in Elvis.
I heard that last night.
The Razzies even gave themselves award for Worst Actress after they nominated 12-year-old Ryan Keira Armstrong in the category. They took her out. The Raspberry accepted the dishonor on the organization's behalf.
We earned this Razzie. And on behalf of young, old, and all artists still in development stages, we know the process of growing means trying things out, stumbling, picking ourselves up, and making better choices. A process that can take a lifetime. So until our next mistake, cheers.
Interesting. So I watched Blonde. It was on Netflix. It was long, very long.
It was long.
It was peculiar, but it was kind of touching. It was the life of Marilyn Monroe.
I thought it was, I'll say this, between Blonde and Elvis, because you had two films that were discussing two iconic figures that, you know, have, you know, long passed, but they had a shining moment, a shining stint.
Mm-hmm.
But then they also had their demons. And I thought that Blonde, even though there were some parts that were kind of, you know, artsy and, mm-hmm. and that sort of thing, mm-hmm. I thought it, I guess when I see something like that, I want it to be less stylized as a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought Elvis was a little too stylized. It was a little too glitzy to tackle a figure that, these are two figures that mm-hmm. are still held up in the lexicon as, you know, icons.
Mm-hmm.
And you see people, there is not a cottage industry for Marilyn Monroe impersonators, but there are those out there.
Yeah.
There is a cottage industry for Elvis impersonators.
A lot of people are making money off Elvis.
Yes. And I would think that I guess I'm being too serious in my mind, but I thought it would be handled a little bit more classy.
But didn't Elvis the movie get nominated for Best Picture? Didn't I read that?
I believe it did.
But Tom Hanks was sort of
So
he played Captain
Colonel Tom Parker.
Right, right.
Who was the driving force, the manager behind Elvis's career, but also manipulative, very manipulative, and Pretty dark.
Yeah.
Not necessarily evil, but
he was
trending that way.
Right.
But I thought he did fine. I thought he did okay. I didn't think he was
well. They didn't like the Razzies.
But again, the Razzies. I think the year after Halle Berry won her Oscar for Monsters Ball, they gave her a Razzie for Catwoman. Oh. I mean, they're just.
They got to pick somebody.
Yeah. I'm stopping short of saying they're haters.
Well,
they're kind of haters.
Well, anyway, we are working. We are not paying attention. Just only briefly, we're not announcing any winners or any losers. I don't even know who has won. Sometimes you can follow, you know, along on Twitter and see who's what. I will say this, though, about the Oscars and the movies, is that once they're out and the awards are over, I tend to want to go and say, okay, now I'm going to go check out this, that, or the other one. Tar was bizarre. That was Cate Blanchett as a female composer.
Conductor.
Conductor.
An orchestra conductor.
And she was insane?
She was... I'm not going to give anything away with this movie. I'm just going to say for people that want to go see it or haven't seen it yet, it's a very interesting juxtaposition about what we go through today as a society and a lot of the talking points that people have brought up, mm-hmm. especially politically.
Okay.
That's how we'll leave it.
Okay. Well, we're going to take a break. We'll do national news, local news, and then back with Center Stage after this. It is 8:52 on WCCO Radio. You're listening to Steele Talking. Geraldine Steele's off tonight. I'm filling in. Jonathan Lowe is at the helm as we near the 9 o'clock hour here on WCCO Radio. Of course, the 9 o'clock hour is all about entertainment. It's called Center Stage, and we've got a big lineup of people for Center Stage. We're also keeping our eye on the Oscars as they are taking place in Los Angeles. But we thought for just a minute, Jonathan, we would talk about the Golden Raspberry winners, or should we say losers. They've been announced. Blonde, starring Oscar nominee Ana de Armas, won Worst Picture of the Year and Worst Screenplay.
Wow.
Hold on. Tom Hanks was voted Worst Supporting Actor and Worst Screen Combo for Tom Hanks and his latex-laden face in Elvis.
I heard that last night.
The Razzies even gave themselves award for Worst Actress after they nominated 12-year-old Ryan Keira Armstrong in the category. They took her out. The Raspberry accepted the dishonor on the organization's behalf.
We earned this Razzie. And on behalf of young, old, and all artists still in development stages, we know the process of growing means trying things out, stumbling, picking ourselves up, and making better choices. A process that can take a lifetime. So until our next mistake, cheers.
Interesting. So I watched Blonde. It was on Netflix. It was long, very long.
It was long.
It was peculiar, but it was kind of touching. It was the life of Marilyn Monroe.
I thought it was, I'll say this, between Blonde and Elvis, because you had two films that were discussing two iconic figures that, you know, have, you know, long passed, but they had a shining moment, a shining stint.
Mm-hmm.
But then they also had their demons. And I thought that Blonde, even though there were some parts that were kind of, you know, artsy and,
mm-hmm.
and that sort of thing,
mm-hmm.
I thought it, I guess when I see something like that, I want it to be less stylized as a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought Elvis was a little too stylized. It was a little too glitzy to tackle a figure that, these are two figures that mm-hmm. are still held up in the lexicon as, you know, icons.
Mm-hmm.
And you see people, there is not a cottage industry for Marilyn Monroe impersonators, but there are those out there.
Yeah.
There is a cottage industry for Elvis impersonators.
A lot of people are making money off Elvis.
Yes. And I would think that I guess I'm being too serious in my mind, but I thought it would be handled a little bit more classy.
But didn't Elvis, the movie get nominated for Best Picture? Didn't I read that?
I believe it did.
But Tom Hanks was sort of...
So
he played Captain...
Colonel Tom Parker.
Right, right.
Who was the driving force, the manager behind Elvis's career, but also manipulative, very manipulative and... Pretty dark.
Yeah.
Not necessarily evil, but
he was
was trending that way.
Right.
But I thought he did fine. I thought he did okay. I didn't think he was
bad. The Razzies.
The Razzies, I think the year after Halle Berry won her Oscar for Monster's Ball, they gave her a Razzie for Catwoman. Oh. I mean they're just
They got to pick somebody.
Yeah. I'm stopping short of saying they're haters.
Well,
they're kind of haters.
They're kind of haters. Well, anyway, we are working. We are not paying attention, just only briefly. We're not announcing any winners or any losers. I don't even know who has won. Sometimes you can follow, along on Twitter and see who's what. I will say this, though, about the Oscars and the movies, is that once they're out, and the awards are over, I tend to want to go and say, okay, now I'm going to go check out this, that, or the other one. Tar was bizarre. That was Cate Blanchett as a female composer.
Conductor.
Conductor.
An orchestra conductor.
And she was insane?
She was... I'm not going to give anything away with this movie. I'm just going to say for people that want to go see it or haven't seen it yet, it's a very interesting juxtaposition about what we go through today as a society and a lot of the talking points that people have brought up, mm-hmm. especially politically.
Okay.
That's how we'll leave it.
Okay. Well, we're going to take a break. We'll do national news, local news, and then back with Center Stage after this.